It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Pope Francis holds Christmas Eve Mass. U.S. denies Islamic State shot down a Jordanian jet over Syria. I'm Ray Kugel reporting from Washington. Pope Francis delivered his Christmas Eve message calling on the world's 1.2 billion Roman Catholics to remember that God's message of peace is stronger than darkness and corruption. Thousands of people gathered at St. Peter's Basilica on Wednesday night for the Pope's Christmas Eve Mass. Earlier, he telephoned Christian refugees in Iraq in a show of solidarity. Pilgrims from around the world converged on the West Bank town of Bethlehem for Christmas Eve celebrations hosted by the Palestinian Authority. Robert Berger reports.
Christmas celebrations kicked off in Bethlehem with a festive march by Palestinian boy and girl scouts through Manger Square. They marched past a giant Christmas tree facing the ancient Church of the Nativity, where tradition says Jesus was born. A large crowd of local Palestinians looked on, including Sufyan Sobek, who is a Muslim.
Most people be happy because it is a Christmas. We are here in Bethlehem, the city of the peace.
Pilgrims came from all over the world to participate in the festivities and worship at the ancient Grotto of the Nativity. Robert Berger for VOA News, Bethlehem.
President Obama used his weekly radio address to wish Americans a Merry Christmas.
Today, our family will join millions across the country in celebrating the birth of Jesus. The birth not just of a baby in a manger, but the message that has changed the world. To reach out to the sick, the hungry, the troubled, and above all else, to love one another as we would be loved ourselves.
This is VOA News. Somalia has a new prime minister. Somali lawmakers approved the appointment of Omar Abdirashid Ali Sharmarki on Wednesday. He is the country's third prime minister in 2 years. The United States and United Nations are renewing pressure on Somali leaders to build a stable government for the war-torn country. One of the most wanted men in the world was extradited to Kenya Wednesday, where he pleaded not guilty to charges of ivory tusk trafficking. Faisal Muhammad Ali was on Interpol's 10 most wanted list when he was arrested in Tanzania Monday for crimes against the environment. Kenyan authorities say they found at least 2 tons of ivory in Ali's possession during a raid last June. Analysts say the amount of ivory represents 114 poached elephants. Ali is being held pending a bail hearing December 30th. The U.S. military says Islamic State militants did not shoot down the Jordanian F-16 fighter jet that crashed in Syria Wednesday. General Lloyd Austin, who is overseeing the U.S.-led coalition fighting Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, strongly condemned the militants for capturing the downed pilot. The plane went down near the northern Syrian city of Raqqa, the main stronghold for Islamic State, which seized large parts of Syria and Iraq earlier this year. The pilot is the first captive taken from the U.S.-led coalition. A suicide bomber targeting pro-government Sunni fighters in Iraq killed at least 26 people and wounded 55 others near Baghdad Wednesday. Most of the victims were militiamen standing on line waiting for their paychecks. A police officer has shot and killed an armed black man in a St. Louis, Missouri suburb near where an unarmed black teen was killed by a white officer in August. The shooting took place late Tuesday at a gas station in Berkeley, Missouri. St. Louis County Police spokesman John Belmar says the officer encountered 2 men during a routine check at a gas station. The spokesman says one of the men pointed a gun at the officer, prompting the officer to open fire. The second man fled the scene.
We do not believe that there was any shots fired from the suspect. The suspect was armed with a 9mm high point. It had a defaced serial number. It had 5 rounds in the chamber and 1 round in the magazine.
Police spokesman Belmar says the suspect had a history of run-ins with the law. Sony Pictures is now distributing the controversial comedy The Interview online, a day after announcing that 200 independent theaters will screen the movie on Christmas Day. Sony pulled the film from general release last week after several large U.S. theater chains said they would refuse to show it because of threats of violence. North Korea condemned the comedy movie, and unknown attackers hacked Sony Pictures earlier this month, stealing valuable and highly confidential information. The United States blames North Korea for the cyber attack, a charge Pyongyang denies. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 25th, Christmas Day. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone authorities tell citizens not to forget Ebola as they celebrate Christmas Day today, Thursday.
Sierra Leone is indeed a very religious country. That is why Christmas, we expect everybody after the church service to retire home and use the day as a reflection.
Abdi Liberete, Sierra Leone's government spokesman, residents of Liberia's West Point, which bore the brunt of Ebola measures earlier in the year, are celebrating Christmas today in a festive mood. Hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese are spending their second Christmas in a displacement camp, and Zimbabwe civil servants say the government should pay their bonuses.
If this particular subject matter is not addressed, surely the first term for 2015 is in jeopardy. And we are not going to be forced to be coerced or to be intimidated from taking this course of action.
Raymond Manjangwe is Secretary General of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. A solar-powered computer lab helps thousands in Nairobi and here in the United States. A neighborhood Christmas lights and music competition. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Sierra Leone's government says a newly trained burial team will soon be deployed to the places mostly affected by the Ebola outbreak. Abdoulaye Birete tells reporter Peter Clotty that the new burial teams are part of the government's effort to contain the further spread of Ebola during the Christmas festivities.
Absolutely. I can confirm that to you very authoritatively, that we realize that so far, the burial team, since the fourth case index was reported in Sierra Leone, that was on May 25, it remains to be the only team in the Ebola response that has not reported any casualty and not infected in any way. So by way of keeping track record of that very enviable posture the burial team is enjoying, the International Organization for Migration, the United Kingdom Aid, as well as the Ministry of Health and Sanitation of Sierra Leone, have been training routine teams for the Western area in particular, or 14 teams now, and also in the south, east, and north of the country.
So this new group that just came out, when are they going to be deployed after finishing training this week?
They just completed the training. They are ready to go into the field. In fact, what we have done as part of deploying them is we have given the current burial teams a day off per week so that that day, even though we still pay them for it, it is a day for them not to be exhausted. And also, they are now going into rotations. That way, they don't have to be too exhausted at all. So they are ready by next week. Immediately after the holidays, they are going to be very gingered up into the field. And I must emphasize that they are not just only trained in the effective use of personal protective equipment, but they are also trained as hygienists.
25th December is very important in the lives of not only Muslims, but Christians who will be celebrating their savior. Now, in this case, how are these protocols, coordination with the churches to ensure that infection is cut down to a minimum as they celebrate 25th December in Sierra Leone?
Thank you very much, Peter. I think that's a very important question. Just as you mentioned, Sierra Leone is indeed a very religious country, whereby even though it is a Christmas season, usually even the Muslims do patronize the Christians in celebrating this occasion. That is why we believe that we work through the Interreligious Council of Sierra Leone so that we make sure we are on the same frequency with all the measures of making sure that tomorrow Christmas, we expect everybody after the church service to retire home and use the day as a reflection. And also on New Year's Eve, we expect by 5 p.m., which is still broad daylight, everybody should go back home as a way of welcoming the New Year.
Abdullahi Birete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone's government. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. This year's Christmas celebration is a little festive for residents of Liberia's West Point who bore the brunt of their government's Ebola control measures earlier this year. The densely populated borough was quarantined for 10 days, and in August, soldiers opened fire on the residents during an Ebola protest, killing a 16-year-old boy. They also experienced a state of emergency along with the rest of the country. Archie Pompon is a member of Respecting Cooperator, a local human rights organization based in West Point. He says, although the community is still mindful of Ebola, the residents are feeling a little festive this Christmas.
From an organization standpoint and the kind of contact tracing, Ebola have been able to be kicked out from the community. And so the Christmas celebration is having a kind of impact on the community. Everybody is enjoying the situations. And so right now, West Point serves as one of the heartbeats of the city center, because it is a peninsula and everybody depends on the general market in terms of the shopping mall. And so West Point is hosting one of the biggest shopping malls in terms of how and where people go to shopping. The community is benefiting from the lifting of the quarantine. People is pulling into the community to have in terms of the grocery, in terms of foodstuffs, in terms of Christmas wearing.
Archie, you said that now the people are enjoying going about their business during this Christmas holiday. Do they still go about practicing those Ebola measures that are necessary? Do people still wash their hands?
Oh yes. Every home in West Point have got an Ebola material that has to do with washing your hands. The critical thing here is that when you come to West Point and everybody has an Ebola equipment, the first thing you do is wash your hands. People are not eating bush meat. Second thing is people are not attending to that, because every home in West Point was provided with PPE, protective Ebola equipment, in terms of how they attend to even their sick loved ones.
As you mentioned, West Point is kind of the center of economic activity. So are the markets now, the markets in West Point, are they all back in operational mode now?
Yeah. West Point is almost like the heart of the city. All of the central Monrovia and the capital city economic activities happen at the doorsteps of West Point. Right after West Point is the general market, where people buy groceries, where people buy clothing, where people buy other activities in terms of their sustenance and maintenance of their home. And so the interaction is great. West Point is becoming lively, like I'm speaking now. Too many economic activities, too many entertainment is going on, too many interactions is going on, but the procedure in terms of reducing the spread of Ebola is very much on the minds of the people. Keep washing your hands, keep avoiding safe persons, report safe persons, don't take dead persons.
As you mentioned, there are too many entertainment activities going on, and so I don't want to take you away from that. I want you to go and enjoy yourself on this Christmas day. So let me say Merry Christmas to you and a Happy New Year to you and members of your West Point community.
Thank you so much for contacting us.
That was Archie Pompom, a member of Respecting Cooperator, a local NGO based in Liberia's West Point. Hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese are spending their second Christmas in internally displaced persons or IDPs camps. Reporter Mugumi Davis Wakaringi met with some of them at a United Nations camp in Juba as they prepare to celebrate Christmas for the second year in a row in a divided country.
This 14-square-meter structure in the UN House IDP camp in Juba has no walls. The roof is a plastic sheet, but the thousands of IDPs living here have turned this ramshackle house into a place of worship. Days before Christmas, the makeshift church is bustling as the choir rehearses for Mass to celebrate the birth of Christ. One of the church leaders, William Dengbiar, believes Christmas is an opportunity for all South Sudanese to unite.
We want to tell people that Jesus will be born among us. He will be born in our heart, and we want to live in peace. We want to receive Jesus with love. We want to receive Jesus with hope as well as peace in our country.
Not far from the church, 15-year-old Nyai Lei Martin remembers what Christmas was like before South Sudan plunged into violence. She says that in 2012, the year before fighting broke out in South Sudan, the family feasted on chicken and many different foods on Christmas Day. There were many people at her house that year. 2013 was very different. Martin was living in Juba with her father and young sister when fighting broke out in the capital on December 15 last year. She was going to school. Her father worked for the government. The rest of the family, her mother and two brothers, were in Bentiu. Bentiu is one of the towns in South Sudan that have been devastated by the year-long conflict. For the second Christmas in a row, Martin's family will have to celebrate Christmas apart. Martin says she not only misses her mom and brothers, she also misses rushing home after Christmas service to help prepare a Christmas feast for the whole family. Chudiel Gadichol fled to UN House for his life when the fighting broke out in Juba last December. He left his wife and children at home. His family eventually made it to Ethiopia. He is in this camp for IDPs.
I feel very pain, but because we are in war in South Sudan, what can I do? I want to bring them here, but I don't have salary to bring them here. No money.
34-year-old Deng Diang Chol also ran to the UN House base with his wife and two children on December 19th last year, 4 days after fighting erupted. He likes to remember how the family celebrated Christmas before the conflict. Chol never imagined he would spend even one Christmas in the camp, let alone two. But he says even though he's one of nearly 2 million South Sudanese who have been displaced by the fighting, he's lucky because his family is still intact. They'll be celebrating Christmas together in this camp for IDPs. And like many others here, they'll be wishing and praying for peace. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 25th. Merry Christmas to all of you around Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. The majority of Zimbabwe's civil servants say they are saddened this Christmas because their employer, the Zimbabwe government, has treated them badly this year, particularly during this festive holiday season. Many are going for the holidays without their 13th check or bonuses, which the government says it will stagger into next year. The Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says it wants an urgent meeting with government representatives to address the issue of bonuses. Secretary General Raymond Majongwe says the government has largely ignored them over the issue, with most civil servants having to read about their fate in the media.
Apparently, after realizing that government was dilly-dallying on the plight and the fate of civil servants, we communicated to government. And we thought the new minister, Priscilla Mfumira, was going to respond to our request of an urgent meeting after realizing that either the Apex Council has deliberately connived with government or they've gone to sleep. And for that reason, it was very correct for us to make this demand, because in 2013, we had a meeting with Minister Goshi on the 23rd and the 24th of December in trying to find a solution. So as far as we are concerned, we are going to try and deal with this particular challenge in the full view of the economic reality that our members find themselves in.
Has the minister responded to your request?
We have not heard a response from the minister. All we have heard is that she made a statement in the Chronicle, a Bulawayo paper. But we are worried, because if the minister is going to develop this propensity of responding to proper government processes in the media, then we are also going to respond in the media, because at the end of the day, it is not correct, because we have a statutory responsibility to engage government in discussions, in formal meetings, and we want the minister to desist from engaging their workers in the media as they are showing up. If this particular subject matter is not addressed, surely the first term for 2015 is in jeopardy. And we are not going to be forced to be coerced or to be intimidated from taking this course of action.
Raymond Majangwe is the Secretary General of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He spoke with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. Kawangware is one of the fastest growing and poorest slums in Nairobi. Most of its 300,000 residents try to survive on less than a dollar a day with little hope of improving their futures. That is where the solar power computer lab on wheels comes in. The mobile bus has 12 computers powered by solar panels and gives Kenya's poorest access to technology. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Kawangware.
Alan Midevo intently goes through the paces on a computer. The 20-year-old is among 20 students being taught basic computer skills. For nearly 3 months, Midevo has attended free daily lessons without fail. It's an opportunity he normally cannot afford. His mother earns about $2 a day washing clothes. Similar training usually costs as much as $100 at more traditional learning institutions. Midevo says he only had to pay a one-time fee $2.20 to show he was serious about studying.
The tutor is very friendly. He enables us to understand more. It's cost effective as it's only 200 shillings compared to the other colleges. And this project enables us to have computer skills.
Craft Silicon Foundation, a non-profit group, began offering free information and communication technology courses to underprivileged young people 5 years ago. The training takes 10 weeks. If students pass the final exam, they receive certificates of graduation. But this is no traditional class setting. It is in a bus with 12 computers powered by solar panels. This $100,000 mobile computer lab has helped close to 7,000 students. Craft Silicon is a global financial software company with offices in Kenya, Tanzania, India, and the United States. CEO Kamal Budhapati says it promotes computer literacy as part of its corporate philosophy of social responsibility.
Education is still a luxury at some of these slums. So we believe that as much as it is so important, we must go to slum areas where they cannot afford to get technological education.
The Kenyan government also plans to increase internet literacy and access to information by providing free internet in 2015 to all the informal settlements in Nairobi. For now, these students from Kawangware look forward to completing their course and working to better their future. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
During the Christmas season, it is common to see homes ablaze with holiday lights, but there are neighborhoods sprinkled throughout the United States that take the idea to a whole new level. One such community is in the Los Angeles, California area. The lights are such a spectacle that they have become a holiday attraction. Elizabeth Lee reports for VOA.
This is a traffic jam people are happy to be a part of. People have come for miles to see this annual show of music and lights in Pasadena, California.
Actually, I started coming here before I was even married. My friend brought me out here. Every year would come out here during Christmas time. And after I got married, I brought my wife and now my kids. And we always try to look for this house with the orchestra every year.
The music is nice, but the lights bring the crowds. All of this is part of this neighborhood's good-natured holiday competition to create the best, most creative, and humorous light shows. This is one of the winners. Growing up here has been fun, says Jenny Ream.
Not many people get to do something like this in their neighborhood, so it's really nice.
Each block has a theme, from candles to Christmas trees, but this little drummer boy on Kathy Gregg's block has a special look.
My son was in the Army, and when he went over to Iraq, I decided to, because of him, repaint mine in the camouflage. So that's close to my heart.
Greg's son is now safe at home, but her display hasn't changed in support of other military families. For Adrian McEachran, these lights are a part of tradition.
I did it with the kid, with my mom, and just pass it on to my kids. Hopefully when they get older, they can do it with their kids. And it just, you know, you see a lot of the houses here that have a lot of spiritual meaning with what the real season's about.
God bless you.
God bless you, too.
If you do Christmas just for the sake of it, it doesn't make sense. It becomes any of the other type of celebration. This is a special one.
But there are displays that are set out just for the fun of it.
It's neat for the kids to get excited when they see certain characters, you know, Snoopy or Mickey Mouse, and the house around the corner had Star Wars.
There have been decorations and lights in this neighborhood for more than 50 years. Carried by a mom dressed in... Homeowners say they will continue to light their homes, and visitors say they will keep coming back to continue this holiday tradition. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Pasadena, California.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. Sela Jepleting triumphed at the Shoe for Africa 5-kilometer road race in Iten, Rift Valley Province, Western Kenya on Wednesday. Proceeds from the charity race staged at the world-famous High Altitude Training Center will be channeled towards promoting the education and athletics careers of promising young female athletes, the foundation founder Toby Tanza told the Kenyan media in Iten. Turning to netball, Uganda has a strong chance of advancing beyond the group preliminary round. At the 2015 Netball World Cup in Sydney, Australia, the team coach Fred Mugerwa told the Kampala media. Following the recent draws for the Netball World Cup in Sydney, Australia, Uganda is in Group D with Fiji, Wales and tournament debutants Zambia. Africa's strongest sides and regular World Cup campaigners Malawi and South Africa are in Group C with Singapore and Sri Lanka. Staying in Kampala, the Speaker of the Ugandan Parliament, Rebecca Kadaga, urged the private sector to support the Uganda netball team's initiative to raise funds to make the trip to the Netball World Cup in Sydney, Australia. Kadaga made the appeal when she recently received pledges from the Asiatic Sports Center and the Kiboko Group of Companies in Kampala. Asiatic will contribute towards the team's kit, while Kiboko pledged to cover part of their travel expenses to Sydney. Uganda qualified for the Netball World Cup last month in Gaborone, Botswana. Upon the team's return home, a fundraising drive was initiated to raise resources to enable the team to travel to compete at the World Cup. Uganda last competed at the Netball World Cup in 1979 in Trinidad and Tobago. In football news, Guinea will assemble in Casablanca, Morocco for their final preparations ahead of their campaign at the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations, the Guinea Football Federation revealed in Conakry on Wednesday. In August, the Confederation of African Football suspended football activities in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone following the outbreak of the Ebola virus in the Mana River region. As a result, Guinea hosted their home matches in the Nations Cup qualifiers in Morocco. They will play Senegal in the Moroccan town of El Jadida on the 10th of January in their final build-up before the Nations Cup starts the following week in Equatorial Guinea. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a Merry Christmas. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a very good and Merry Christmas to you and your family. And that's it for this Christmas Day, December 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer James Harmon. I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you a very Merry Christmas.
africa.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
All day, all night.